Thank you for blessing us so this morning. So we're continuing in the narrative lectionary. We last week looked a little bit of the story of Jacob by the Jabbok River. We're going to skip this year the entire story of Joseph that occupies well over a third of the book of Genesis and move instead into the story of Moses that we find in the early part, the part we'll be looking at today in Exodus chapter 3, the call of Moses. And I just want to encourage you, if you can take out this salmon-colored insert, it's a devotional that can help you connect with the story that is being proclaimed each Sunday here. Follow up with that in readings every day of the week. But as well, beginning on October, I think it's 16th on a Wednesday, and October 18th, we're going to be offering two small groups, both meeting in the evening. The information about them is in your bulletin that will dive into the themes and the text more deeply in a Bible study setting, small group fellowships taking place each week, one at the parsonage, one here at the church, or over at the annex. And so beginning the middle of October, you'll also have that opportunity to have the story of God, get rooted more deeply in our individual and our corporate lives. So I want to encourage you. There's both this personal dimension, corporate dimension in worship, and then a small group Bible study dimension to the narrative lectionary. But now you remember from earlier when we began this series back in the 1st of September that God made three promises to Abraham. They occur in Genesis chapter 12 and are repeated in various settings and contexts through the early part of the Genesis story. The first promise was the promise of land that the children of Israel would inherit. The second promise was the promise of becoming a great nation. And the third promise that was given to Abraham, that his descendants, the people of Israel, would be a blessing to all nations. So land, becoming a great nation, and then for the purpose of blessing the rest of the nations of the world. And so by the time we come to the book of Exodus, two of these promises are already evident. The first one is that the descendants of Abraham are many and are well on their way to indeed becoming that great nation. And they have begun the ministry of blessing other nations. That takes place in the latter part of the book of Genesis because we see there that through the wise leadership of Joseph, an Israelite, as the second in command to Pharaoh, that the land and nation of Egypt is spared a great famine. So already we see these two promises at the end of the book of Genesis, two of the three, becoming to be fulfilled. But as Exodus opens, the promise of a homeland is the only one that has remained dormant. And so Exodus is the story of how God brings his people to the very cusp of living into that third promise that he has made to Abraham. And for that reason, Exodus is critical for the shaping of the identity of Israel as the people of God. And the single human figure through whom God works to bring about his plans for the people of Israel is, of course, who is it? From the reading today, Moses, yeah, it's Moses, of course. It's Moses. Now, just to recap a little bit of what happens in the first two chapters of Exodus, it's recorded there that a Pharaoh comes to power who did not know Joseph, meaning knew nothing about how Joseph had blessed the nation of Israel, did no longer held Joseph and his descendants in high esteem. Now, the Hebrew people had continued to grow and multiply, but they had been enslaved instead of being favored by the Egyptians, and it was going on 400 years that they had lived under this authority. Now, despite this Pharaoh's best efforts, because he was threatened by the growth of the Israelites in his country, and he calls the midwives of the Israelite people and tells them that if a male child is born, to have that child murdered. And in spite of what he tried to do to limit the growth of the people of Israel, we discover that they continue to prosper and to grow. And that's in part because the two midwives fear God and obey God rather than fearing the state authority of the Pharaoh. It's interesting in that part of the story. You remember, of course, that so much of the book of Genesis focuses on names and the significance of names. You know, Isaac, meaning laughter, or God has given laughter. The changing of Jacob's name from Jacob to Israel, which we looked at last week. It's interesting, when you get to Exodus, Pharaoh's not named. It's the midwives who are named, right? It's the midwives who are honored in the text because of their obedience to God. And in light of Pharaoh's great power in that context, from God's point of view, Pharaoh really doesn't matter that much. It's the midwives that matter. And so they're named and they're blessed. Now, from that, we learn that Moses, his mother, comes up with a very clever scheme to protect him as a male child born with a Pharaoh that is trying to destroy all the male children, puts him in the basket, you know, wraps it or coats it with tar and pitch, puts it out into the Nile River, seen there by Pharaoh's daughter when she comes down to take her bath. She hears the baby cry, and her heart goes out to the child, draws the baby out of the water. That's what, by the way, the name of Moses means. It means to be drawn out. And so as Moses is kind of drawn out of the Nile, Moses is going to draw the people of Israel out of Egypt through the Red Sea and into the Promised Land. He's drawn out, and he is then raised as a son of Pharaoh. Wonderful and incredible how God works. Moses, however, must have some sense of who he truly is. So when he sees an Egyptian taskmaster abusing a Hebrew slave, his anger gets the best of him, and he murders the Egyptian. He finds out that this is widely known, or becoming widely known, and so his life being threatened, he flees to the land of Midian, where he settles, starts a family, and begins work as a shepherd. And it is there in Midian that God begins to prepare Moses to lead the Israelites out of Egypt. There's so much in this text, but what I want to lift up for us this morning is I believe that Moses' encounter with God in Exodus 3 illuminates for us some important truths, some important principles about how God leads and how God calls each of us in our lives. So let's go right into that. I think the first principle, it's what we see in the text, is that we become aware of God's leading in our lives as we pay attention to how God is showing up in our daily routines. We become aware of God's leading in our lives as we begin to pay attention to how God is showing up in our daily routines. You hear that in verses 2 through 4 of Exodus 3. Moses notices the burning bush. He says, "I will go over and see this strange sight." In the Hebrew, he turns aside. You know, he's out tending the flocks of his father-in-law Jethro. And when the Lord saw that Moses noticed the bush, then he called to it. It was only after Moses kind of stopped what he was doing and turned to see this and then go to it that God spoke. Now, if Moses thought, well, here's a bush that, you know, it's on fire. I guess that happens and can happen in the desert when lightning strikes or whatever it may be. And if he would have just kept on his merry way, he wouldn't have heard God. But because he stopped and he noticed it and he turned to it, he heard God calling him. all Moses was doing was he was going about his ordinary daily life, but he took this time to turn aside and discovered the presence of God in the midst of his daily routine. I know what you're thinking. The presence of God doesn't show up for me every day in a burning bush. Well, granted, I'll give you that, okay? That's true. I mean, most of us don't have many or ever any burning bush encounters with God in our everyday lives, or even ever in our lives. Yet, what this text tells us is God is present in our personal worlds, and God is desiring that we know and live into his call to daily walk with him and be led by him in our lives. But to hear his voice, we first have to turn aside sometimes to develop this sort of, I was struggling with what to call this, but to develop this sort of spiritual peripheral vision of how God is at work in the ordinary parts of our everyday routines. Just this week, I was talking with one of our church members who related to me how she had started to notice all these opportunities God was giving her to ask others if she might pray for their needs. People were coming to her at her work, sharing about things going on in their lives, and there was just something in her that prompted her to, would it be okay if I prayed for you about that? And as is often the case, when you ask people if you can pray for them, most of the time they're delighted. And so they did. And as she did that, lo and behold, more people were coming to her. And she said these opportunities were just coming up as she went about the work that her job requires. And so as she was relating that story to me, it struck me that this individual, simply in the context of her daily responsibilities, was developing this kind of spiritual peripheral vision, developing a sense of how to pay attention to God's activity in the place where she spent most of her waking hours during the week. And so when you start each day, opening yourself up, inviting God to show you how he's at work, you'll begin to sense his leading more definitely in your daily life. Moses turned aside to pay attention to what God was doing. When he did that, he heard his voice. Now, the second principle I see about how God leads us and calls us from this story is this. God's call is always profoundly personal and primarily relational. God's call is always profoundly personal and primarily relational. What is the first words that God says to Moses in the text, verse 4? Moses. He calls him by name. And that's indicative of how God works. It's a personal call to each one of us because God is the one that created you. God is the one that wired you the way you are. God is the one that knows you best of all. And so God knows how best to get your attention, how best to connect with you. And that's what he does when he connects with Moses through his name. But the personal dimension is also reflected in the fact that God reveals his own name to Moses. You know, God doesn't stay distant from Moses. Moses says and asks, well, what is your name? And God gives it to him. There's another way in which we see, I think, and this is a little bit of it's not a stretch, but I'm extrapolating it from the text, where we see how God's call to Moses is a personal call, is the first thing that God tells him after he gives him calls him by name and then tells him, take off your sandals, you're in the presence of holiness. The first thing that God tells him is God's own concern for justice for his people. Did you catch that in verses 7 through 9? I have seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out. I am concerned about their suffering. I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. Now, that's all true, what God is telling them, but believe you me, I think that resonates with Moses. Because what was Moses doing that led him into Midian in the first place? His concern for justice for his people. I mean, it resulted in him killing an Egyptian taskmaster, but Moses also shared that concern for his people. And so God, I think, connects with Moses, and that call then resonates deep in Moses' life. And that's the way God works for us. He knows those things we're passionate about, those things that we care about that will build the kingdom of God. And so he'll connect with us in his call to us through those desires, those things that we care about deeply. It's a personal call. It's also, though, a relational call. From verse 11 of the text, verse 11 of chapter 3, all the way through the middle part of chapter 4, there is this give and take with God. Because you know the story, Moses resisted the call. Five different times, he comes up with five excuses. Moses would say reasons why he shouldn't be the one doing this. Why he shouldn't be the one leading them out of Egypt. You hear in verse 11 the core of Moses' reluctance, and it's simply this. It's this sense of inadequacy. Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And so there is this relational dimension to the call of God. You know, in some ways, to kind of connect this to last week's text, Jacob wrestled with the man, the stranger, the appearance of God by the river Jabbok. Moses wrestles here in the wilderness as well, right? He's wrestling with this call that God has placed upon him. And God engages him fully. I mean, that's the way God is. I mean, what he wants in his call to us is that we go deeper in our relationship with him. And so the give and take, the wrestling back and forth, that's part and parcel of it. But God's response to Moses, I think, reveals the third principle of how God leads and how God calls. The response to who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt. You notice how God doesn't reply, well, Moses, you're the chosen one. I mean, you floated in the Nile River. You were raised by Pharaoh's daughter in Pharaoh's household. You have shown your concern and compassion for your people. It's why you are now in somewhat exile in Midian and have been for all these years. That's not what God does in convincing Moses of this call. Let me just quote to you what our brother Jim Bruckner says about this in his commentary on Exodus. God calls Moses to work with God to bring them up, to bring the people up out of the land of Egypt. God would not act alone and did not ask Moses to do it himself. It would be a cooperative effort. The third principle is God's calling and leading is always to a cooperative effort to a greater work than we could ever do alone. It's to a cooperative effort to a greater work than we could ever do alone. Each one of us are given the same promise in our personal calls and God's leading in our lives that Moses was given in verse 12 of Exodus chapter 3, the response to, I'm not adequate to do this, who am I? Let's look at it. Verse 12, let's read it together. And God said, I will be with you. I will be with you. God is declaring to Moses, and he's declaring to us as well, he's not going to abandon us. God is not going to leave you high and dry. God will lead you through life to do things that you could never accomplish alone, so that your faith and your trust in him will go deeper and grow stronger. It's always, in God's economy, a cooperative effort. That's the way God has set it up, for God's glory and for others' blessing, including our own. Now, I know there's only been one Moses, and there's only been one burning bush encounter with God. But now, hear me on this, and know this. God's desire that you know the call he has placed on your life and that you follow his leading is every bit as real, every bit as genuine, every bit as significant for you and those you are called to bless as it was for Moses. At its core, the call God has placed on your life is deeply personal and profoundly relational. And as you live into that call and follow the Lord's leading in your daily routine, developing that spiritual peripheral vision, you too will know the blessing Moses came to know in abundance. That the Lord indeed is with you. Thanks be to God.